Since 1986, Rich Green Lawns has been the leading lawn fertilization company of the Jersey Shore, providing lawn fertilization, bed weed control, tick and mosquito control, as well as tree and shrub programs. Mention this ad and save 50% off your first lawn application. Call or text us today at 732-370-5963. 732-370-5963.
Welcome to Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. Hook, Line, and Splitter is presented by NJR Home Services. And now, here's your host, Greg Giamborisi.
Hook, Line, and Splitter, episode 51. Good day, everybody. I'm Greg Giamborisi. Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. Special guest today is the Director of Player Development for the Phillies, Preston Mattingly. We'll have to talk about a great year for the Phillies organization, of course. A lot of high-end pitching talent. We talk about that. And talk about, you know, kind of his background, how he integrated himself into the system. 14 months ago, he was with the Padres and came in, joined the Phillies as their farm director, director of player development last September. So what was the process like for him to get integrated and learn all the players, all the coaches, all the development and support staff and all that? And we go through a lot of guys, cover a lot of players. He was great. Thanks so much to Preston for having us on. We'll get to the interview now. And on the flip side, we'll go through the Blue Friday weekend, Cyber Weekend specials for the Blue Claws in the Claws Cove and online this weekend. But we don't want to keep you here too long. Thanksgiving weekend, busy time. So let's get right to it. Director of Player Development for the Philadelphia Phillies, Preston Mattingly on Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. Pleased to be joined by Phillies Farm Director Preston Mattingly, who joins us from the Dominican Republic today. Preston, how are you?
I'm doing great. Great to be on.
What's going on down in the DR this week?
So we have about 30 of our young kids down here just training, a lot of strength conditioning, but with some baseball mixed in as well.
So one of the things I wanted to ask you, though, was kind of interesting. So last year, last September, 14-ish months ago, you get hired. Now you're with the Padres, you're doing a lot of stuff with the big league team, and then you get hired into this role as the farm director. What did you have to do to kind of integrate yourself into the system? 200 plus players, you know, 30, 40 coaches, maybe more than that, support staff, and instructional league is, I think, underway when you got there, or was about to begin, right? Right when you got there, what were those first few weeks like for you?
A little bit of a whirlwind, I think, too, me spending the previous 5 years in San Diego. I was leaving a great place from a lot of good people that I had built relationships with. And I really enjoyed my time there. And I think just switching over here, I was very lucky to have people like, you know, I mentioned Lee McDaniel, Edwin Soto, Dana Parks, and just people really helped me kind of learn faces, learn names. And then honestly, I had a roster of all my players and staff. We had headshots. So I was trying to study those to get to know as many people as quickly as possible.
From a player analysis standpoint, did you watch a lot of tape? Did you look at a lot of the on-field data, or did you kind of want to approach it from a blank slate?
A little bit of everything. I think coming from my previous role too, I was a manager of pro scouting in San Diego. So I got exposed to, you know, a lot of the kids domestically from the draft, and then just kind of tracking people's systems and other organizations. Just from afar, I got to know some of the players here in our system.
2 years ago, say, 3 years ago, whatever, was a job like this, a farm director job, something that you thought might be in your baseball path? Or how did that come about?
I think you never know, right? I think, you know, things come up, you know, throughout your time. And, you know, I would say this, during my playing days, I was very lucky to have Terry Collins as my first farm director, and then Deshaun Watson, who's now the farm director of the Washington Nationals. And honestly, I found myself, you know, watching what they did and maybe just thinking along with myself of how I would have done it. And here's how I would tweak this. And I think I got to learn from two really good people. And then also in San Diego, we had Sam Gainey and Ben Sestanovich. So just, it's four quality people that I got to learn and watch and just, you know, almost like get to be in the job without doing the job.
I remember one of the things you said when you had gotten hired was you wanted to kind of improve the communication and I guess straighten out the coaching up and down the system. How do you say that went over the first season?
I think that's always the challenge, right? When you have such a big group of people you're working with, I think it's heading the right direction. I think we still have to make steps forward, but I like the direction we're going.
Did you get a kick? I mean, you always get a kick out of it, but did it kind of give you a little extra boost for the Phillies to beat the Padres there in the NLCS?
Yeah, it was tough. You know, like I said, I have a lot of good friends there and a lot of respect for what they're doing. And it was an odd series for me, but I was happy the Phillies came out on top.
And a lot of the guys that began the season in the minors or spent a lot of time in the minor leagues with the Phillies this year really contributed, over even if it wasn't necessarily in the postseason, a guy like Derek Hall. But, you know, he made a huge impact for the Phillies over the – you can't write the story of the 2022 Phillies without talking about a guy like Derek Hall. And then there's, you know, so many others, like, the, you know, Matt Vierling made a big impact, maybe had one of the five biggest hits of the Phillies season. What did you – kind of, or how did you appreciate that? And I'm sure that gave you a lot of pride as the postseason went along and the regular season went along.
Yeah, I think, you know, to win in professional sports, and honestly, to win in any team environment, like, it's going to take a whole organization. And I think, you know, our major league players, you know, players you mentioned that started in the system, you're going to need contributions from everybody. And I think the Phillies did a really good job last year of getting that, you know, up and down the organization. I think it started in spring training and minicamp. You know, it was an odd year with the lockout. So, you know, a lot of our big league staff got exposed to Derek Hall and Bryson Stott and players that weren't on the 40-man roster. So I thought that kind of helped build the relationships earlier to when those guys did come up. You know, it was a seamless transition for them from the minor leagues to the big leagues.
Yeah, I didn't even mention Stott. I think he ended up getting called up, I don't know, a day or a week or whatever into the season, but could have easily been, you know, the Triple-A shortstop. Who knows what the plans were going into the season. But, you know, it just goes to show you kind of good players can come from anywhere, right? Because Ranger Suarez and Sir Anthony Dominguez were two guys that didn't sign for a ton of money. They came up all the way through the system. I think Suarez is the longest tenured Philly in the player, not maybe not big league Philly, but organizational Philly. And, you know, guys that were in the at strength camp with the farm director Thanksgiving week of whatever 2015, and they make huge impacts for the team. They wouldn't have been there without either one. And then the same thing can be said about Houston, because they had a lot of guys, you know, similar, you know, nondescript international signings that were huge players for them.
Yeah, I think, you know, players come from everywhere and players are everywhere. I think you just have to find them. And I think whether they're a $10,000 sign, a $1,000 sign, or a $10 million sign, I think what they can do for the organization and contribute, that's more, once you get into our system, it's not really about what they signed for, where they came from. It's you know, it's how can we help them get better and how can we help the organization?
Is that, how would you distill your role? The helping coaches help players get to the big leagues?
Yeah, I think, like, to me, like, when I describe my roles, I think I'm trying to create an environment for my players and staff to succeed and thrive. And I think if we can do that really well, they're going to have success in the big leagues. And honestly, And then ultimately too, my coaching staff will, and, you know, hate to lose anybody, but the ultimate goal is to be in the big leagues. And if it's not with us, we hopefully can help them get on with somebody else.
So one of the guys that will be in the big leagues at some point is Andrew Painter, who had a spectacular year. I saw some of the quotes that you had when people were writing up his season and different awards that he won. What were your reasonable expectations for him? Because nobody reasonably expects a 19-year-old to finish, really 18 and a half year old to finish the year thriving in double A. It just doesn't happen. Or 19 and a half year old to finish the year thriving in double A. What were your reasonable expectations going into the season?
You know, I think honestly, we wanted to get a base level of innings on Andrew's underneath Andrew's belt. I think, you know, what he did was tremendous. You know, I think we didn't have a specific level or innings limit. I just know we wanted to get him to a point to where, you know, going forward after this year, he could be able to get to 150 innings, 120 innings, and not have to worry about, hey, do we have to manage this? We have to manage that. Yeah. I mean, like, the numbers speak for themselves. He had a tremendous year. He's a tremendous worker. Yeah. We're really happy with where Andrew ended up.
I think you said in one of the stories, you know, you were most impressed with how his command, his walk rate improved as he moved up, which is something that you don't always see.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, when you see a young high school kid, you know, obviously he's 6'8", he's got a lot of moving parts. And, you know, honestly, like I said, his command was, you know, struggled the most in low A. And I think as we saw him go up, he used more of his pitches. I think he learned how to navigate counts and navigate different types of hitters. So we were really impressed with the way he trended towards the end of the season.
From a stuff standpoint, what stands out most?
Yeah, I mean, like when you just kind of simplify things, it's a kid who's 6'8". He has a good delivery. He separates four pitches, and he's really athletic in his space. You know, I think for 6'8", you usually don't find guys with really good pickoff moves, who are quick to the plate, who field their position well. And then going back to what I just mentioned, it strikes and it's four pitches.
Yeah, two other starters that had really good years, Mick Abel and Griff McGarry. Mick was from the 2020 draft and Griff was from the 2021 draft. And both of them began the year with the Blue Claws before getting promoted. What impressed you most about the two of them?
Yeah, I think I'll start with Griff. He was a little bit slowed this year, like coming into camp with a little bit of an oblique injury. So honestly, once we got him out there healthy and built up, I mean, just the overall stuff. I mean, from a stuff standpoint, I've said this on multiple times. I don't know if there's another pitcher in the minor leagues with better pure stuff than him. You know, I certainly haven't seen him, and I'd like to go watch him myself. Just like we really tried to get Griff to focus on getting him in the strike zone. You know, he's such a loose and hypermobile kid that, you know, just getting mass on him to where, you know, it tightens up his frame and his delivery. And I think, you know, our pitching group, Brian Kaplan, Travis Hergert, Brad Bergeson, and Matt Hockenberry, who touched him throughout the year, they did a really good job of keeping him grounded, keeping him in his space, and he ended up with a really good year.
Does he go to camp? I know you guys had him come out of the pen a little bit at the end of the year, you know, big league implications, they're in a playoff race, whatever. But does he go to the year in 2023 as a starter and then see what happens?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's unanimous throughout the organization. We think Griff McGarry is a starting pitcher, and there's just no question about it.
And then Mick Abel had a great year. I mean, I don't want to say overshadowed, but I guess in some ways he was. But, you know, a guy who was 20 years old, and he turned 21 near the end of the season. But he had a great year, first taste of high A, and he ends up in double A too by the end of the season. So what stood out most about his season?
Yeah, I know everybody kind of always talks about Andrew and the year he had. I'm honestly probably the most proud of Mick. And, you know, I was fortunate to see Mick in high school when he was a junior. He was a really famous name on the high school circuit. You know, and he's had a weird, you know, entrance into pro ball. You know, he pitches in the COVID year in high school, to kind of gets his season cut short. He signs in the COVID draft. He doesn't throw many innings because they're, you know, not much available. And the following year, honestly, he dealt with a little bit of like some mechanical issues he was working through and didn't get the innings base he needed. So I was really proud of Mick to not just have the success he had, but just, I think he logged, you know, over 100 innings, pitched deep into games, and yeah, just continued to trend upwards throughout the end of the season.
You pushed those three guys and all your starters throughout the organization, you know, five-man rotations. I think Mick skipped one turn around the break. Andrew had the little flare-up, missed a couple turns, but nothing crazy. And these guys had big innings jumps, and it seemed to be those three with Griff as well, but it seemed to be an organizational philosophy where you value innings pitched as much as you do, say, strikeouts.
Yeah, I think with those, we'll just stick with those three in particular. Like, we think those guys have a chance to be frontline starting pitchers, and like frontline starting pitchers don't come into games and throw two and three innings. So I think, you know, we wanted to put them on the schedule to where they pitched once a week, almost a college schedule, but allowed them to pitch deep into a game, whether that's a pitch count or an innings standpoint. Like, and we wanted to turn them loose and let them, you know, work through stuff on the mound the second time through the order and the third time through the order, and how to get through that tough jam in the fifth inning or the sixth inning and pitch into the seventh, because that's what frontline starting pitchers do, and that's what we think those guys are going to do in the future.
Yeah, I misspoke. I said five-man rotation, six-man rotation, but they were pitching. They were throwing 100 pitches by the end, 95 pitches by the end of once they got totally built up, and they were, you know, again, they both all pushed 100 innings. Was it the – because now you're 2 years removed from the COVID year. Is everybody back to normal, or did you still feel some impact from not pitching during the COVID year?
Yeah, I think we'll never really know like the impact the COVID year had. But I think a lot of our pitching group and our leadership team, like, we were very careful with how, you know, innings, not necessarily just innings, but the way the data trended throughout the season and just to be careful with workloads. And we didn't want to push these guys too far, knowing that they're not far removed from throwing, you know, very, very limited innings.
You sent seven guys to the Arizona Fall League. They all seem to play pretty well. Johan Rojas gets added to the 40-man roster. A couple of guys were already on the 40-man roster, Jalen Ortiz and Francisco Morales. What did you take overall from the Arizona Fall League experience for those, you know, six or seven guys?
Yeah, I think number one, it's a tremendous league. You're getting to play against some of the top guys throughout baseball. And I think our guys show that they belong. You know, I think you mentioned Johan. You know, he had a tremendous fall league. Obviously the defense and base running is elite. He made good contact out there and just showed the kind of impact player we think he can be. And then just some of the other guys, you know, Jalen got to a little bit of a slow start, but he showed his power potential. Carlos De La Cruz played really well throughout the whole league, played some center field, played some first base, moved around the diamond a little bit, and just showed, you know, even though with him being 6'8" and, you know, it looks like he should be playing power forward somewhere.
Yeah.
This guy, you know, has a really clean swing. He works really hard and he's going to be a big leaguer, and it's just a matter of time. And I think go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, he said he couldn't walk down the hallway in high school without the basketball coach trying to bring him on, but he just loved baseball. His dad was a baseball guy and he just loved baseball. And the Phillies, that was a nice sign, an undrafted guy. They signed him out of high school in 2017. And that was a great signing. He's probably, if you were making a short list, right, of most improved players from when you started to now, he's certainly near the top.
Yeah, he's got to be on that list. And, you know, once again, I think a lot of our hitting coaches that touched him throughout the year did a really good job, whether it's Aria Dude or Tyler Henson. And also you got to give Carlos credit, right? Bought into the plan and continued to trend upward throughout the season. And you saw some things that he had struggled with throughout his career, whether it's contact rates or chase rates, those trended in the right direction this year. And I think, you know, the best is still yet to come for Carlos.
Is it tougher for a guy at that height? Like, he's got obviously a much bigger strike zone to cover. And, you know, he was one of the younger players when he played here in 2019, less young relative to the competition now, but, you know, at that height, and it's pretty raw, probably had a longer way to go to reach his peak. Right.
Yeah. I think, you know, in general, like sometimes when you get guys that are like really long armed or long legs, then it just takes time, number one, to catch up to your body. And I think from a hitting standpoint, like, just, you're always going to have to be conscious of keeping your swing short, because even if it's a tick longer with the length of arms he has, it's going to be problematic for him. So I think it's always going to be something he's going to be conscious of and just continue to work on and drill on in the practice.
You mentioned Johan Rojas. I mean, he could go to the big leagues today and play defense and run the bases as well as anybody. What's the next step though for him offensively?
Yeah, I think I think some things that have been written across baseball. I think Johan hits a ton of balls on the ground. He makes really good contact. I think just him understanding like his zone, where he does damage, and ability to get some balls into the air, which he did a better job of when he got to AA. And honestly, you know, some of the expected numbers early on in Jersey were better than what the numbers showed. And he stung some balls in the air and in the gaps that, you know, that Jersey Shore wind knocked down a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think, you know, just continue to trend to, you know, not necessarily hit balls, fly balls and home runs, but I think just line drives. He's a guy that's going to spray it around. It's going to be doubles, triples. It's going to be a dynamic player.
His numbers here when he got promoted were fine, but they weren't great or anything like that. But he probably played better statistically when he got to Reading after the jump, and he was a young guy. But I mean, you said you're looking at all kinds of factors when you decide whether or not to promote a player.
Yeah, I think, you know, sometimes people just look at like the offensive production, but I think, like you mentioned, the defense and the base running, that's other aspects of his game that were elite. And, you know, the bat was trending in the right direction. And we knew, like, you know, you're there every day and Johan plays really hard and he's dynamic on the field. And we knew some of the expected numbers were better than what they were actually showing. And we wanted to give him a chance at a higher level and just to continue his progress.
Touch on a couple other guys, we're not gonna keep you all day here, but you know how Yu Lee came up here at the end of the year. You know, he's very well regarded, I know, by the Phillies. He was only 19 when he came up. I think he's two or three months younger than Andrew Painter. But the one thing that stood out for me was, you know, 19-year-old middle infielder. He's strong and he drives the ball. I mean, we had of course, Ortiz here last year in 21. I don't know that Ortiz hit a ball farther than at least the one home run that Lee hit here. He was only here for 2 weeks, but the one home run he hit here to left center in August. He's strong. He's got a lot of power. I could see why you guys really like him. What led you to promote him here, and what do you look for him in 23?
Yeah, how you use you nailed it. I mean, he's a compact guy who's really strong for his age. I think he's an improving defender. He played some shortstop there, you know, in low A and high A. He's going to continue to do that, probably up the middle, shortstop and second base. But he puts himself in a really good position to hit. He has a really clean swing and, you know, hits the ball in the air to the pull side. And then just another thing to mention about how you is he's a tremendous baseball player. I mean, like the baseball IQ, the instincts on the field, you know, some of our coaching staff that have been around this guy, whether it's Marty Malloy or Keith Werman, Pat Listash, these guys just rave about the baseball player he is on the field, his ability to communicate.
You said he played, obviously he played mostly second, a little short, talking about Carlos De La Cruz, who played right field, center field, first base. You know, there are guys in the organization, like Dalton Guthrie is a good example, who, and Nick Maton, they're both good examples. They impacted the Phillies in the outfield. They didn't, when they were here in low A in 2018, I don't think any one of them played besides second, outside of the middle infield spots. How aggressive are you, and what kind of benefits do you see from giving guys opportunities at other positions?
You know, I think position versatility is always going to be something that just creates more value for yourself. So like in Carlos or how you or other players you mentioned, like being able to play multiple positions is key, because you may go up to the big leagues, and if you're a right fielder, well, we have Bryce Harper in right field, so you have to play somewhere else. And so the ability to play other positions and impact the club in different ways is really valuable.
A couple relievers that played here that at least caught my eyes, I'm sure they caught yours too, guys like Andrew Baker, Andrew Schultz, you know, big right-handers that throw really hard. And I guess if you could hit 100, that's a good starting point. They both finished the year in Reading, both pitch well here, especially maybe both of them had a little bumpy April, May, but by the end of the year, they were as good as anybody. What, you know, how highly do you regard the guys like that?
Yeah, I think you mentioned, you know, the two Andrews. I'll start with those two. I think just two special arms. And let's start with Bake first. I mean, obviously there's a couple of times where he sat 101 for the full inning. He's been 98 to 102. He has an elite, you know, it's a curveball to my eyes, but I think it grades out as a slider, elite breaking ball. It's just a matter with Andrew is getting him in the strike zone. And I think like just cleaning up some stuff on the delivery allowed him to do that this year. Once again, I think Travis Hergert, Brad Bergeson did a tremendous job with him. And, you know, we were really happy with the progress he made. And the strikes got really improved throughout the year. And then just Schultz. And then Andrew Schultz, yeah, it's another guy. He got off to a little bit of a rough start, was a little bit behind, just coming back from Tommy John. And, you know, by the end of the year, it was, you know, upper 90s fastball with a wipeout slider in the low 90s. And we think just the sky's the limit for these guys. It's really two really elite arms, and we're happy to track them, you know, for the years to come.
Brent Schultz, you sent to Arizona, and he was good, pretty good here at the end of the year, and he ended up in Reading. He was also coming back from Tommy John, but unfortunately his Tommy John surgery was 6 months after Andrew Schultz's, so he's a little behind on the calendar, but you saw enough from him to send him to Arizona to get some additional work, and I know he pitched well there.
Yeah, he had a really good fall league. I didn't get to see him live at an affiliate. I saw him in Clearwater when he was building back, but yeah, a guy that, you know, commands the fastball with a really good slider, and he's a really competitive kid who worked his butt off to get back to where he's at. And I was happy to see him have the success he is and go into the offseason healthy, ready to compete next year.
A guy or two that maybe played here at some point this year that we haven't touched on that kind of caught your eye that you think is someone to watch for a Phillies fan?
See, Jersey, let's see. I'll give you a couple of names. I'm going to give you one that, you know, Phillies fans, you know, Ben Brown, number one. I know this is probably unconventional, but hey, I'm going to give you Ben Brown because
this is I'm the captain of the Ben Brown fan club.
Yeah.
I love Ben Brown. Yeah.
Look, you know, obviously we moved Ben at the deadline for David Robertson, who was a great piece for us. But I just want to talk a little bit about Ben, just the kid who, you know, when I got here was the skinny kind of kid building back from injury, and he was at our strength camps and off-season programs and really self-made. And I, like, you know, you saw him when he got to Jersey, was it was mid to upper 90s with two really elite breaking balls and just a really competitive and tremendous person. And yeah, so I was really happy to see him have the success he had and continue on that with the Cubs. And I think he was also named, I think, you know, pitcher of the year in the league, which was really special.
Yeah, he was, yep.
That'd be a guy. I know he's not with our organization anymore, but just to track throughout. And, you know, if I had to give you another name, I'll mention Kendall Simmons. He came up at the end of the year last year. You know, Kendall didn't get a ton of exposure to the Jersey Shore Club, but, you know, we think Kendall's, you know, starting to come into his own and trend the right direction. Really good defender at third base and second as well. Really strong arm, and he has power potential. So I think he's a guy to watch going into next year.
And then let me ask you about Marcus Lee saying they were kind of on the same track from Clearwater, came up here. Both, you could definitely tell, impact the game. Both got hurt a little bit, missed some time at the end. Presumably, we'll find out in April, but they could be a part of the 2023 opening day. Blue Claws, what did you see from Marcus this year?
Yeah, great call, Greg. I kind of forgot him because he was nicked up there at the end with the back injury. But, yeah, Marcus, too, he made a name for himself this year, and a guy that I knew a little bit from high school, and I always just admired how much he loved to play. I think he's an above-average defender in the outfield, and I think he's got an elite arm. And I think you just saw this, the type of hitter he can be, sprayed around the field with some power, too. So he's a guy to watch next year.
Well, he had a two-home run game where one home run was – 3 feet inside the left field foul pole, and the other home run was maybe 15 or 20 feet inside the right field foul pole. So not a lot of guys can say that.
No, he's definitely got the ability to go line to line.
Some of these guys that you drafted this year, just quickly, you know, Justin Crawford. I heard Justin Crawford and Marion Boyd, they could anchor the Phillies 4x100 team pretty well. They could run.
Yeah, so I'll mention a couple. You forgot Cade Fergus, too, who's an elite runner as well. Just stick with those three. It's three pure center fielders. We'll start with Mari Boyd, and elite bat the ball skills. A kid that, you know, when we got him was recovering from a broken wrist. He's put on 15, maybe 16 pounds since we've got him. He's getting stronger. Yeah, I think it's a kid that people are going to want to watch. And then just you talked about Justin a little bit. Justin, special defender in the outfield, game changing speed, game changing athlete. Yeah, I think he's going to be a guy that sprays it around the field, doubles, triples, and hits runs and more home runs than people think as well.
Were you familiar with this? I know you were pro scouting with San Diego. Were you familiar at all with this draft class?
No. So I was past it there, but, just you hear rumblings and different names come up, but I wasn't familiar with these guys.
Did you have any role in scouting the draft class with the Phillies?
No, I'm in the draft room, but I'm just more there to answer any questions from a player development standpoint. We're really trying to, you know, Brian Barber does a tremendous job and all of his staff, just, you know, make sure the communication's seamless when we get these guys and understand why we're taking them, what we need to work on, and then just kind of first order of business as we get them into our system.
And then last question, and I appreciate a few minutes. This has been great. I know one of the things you're doing now is you're setting up your coaching staffs for 2023, and I know you have a lot of decisions that haven't been made, but as you go through, you know, what do you look for to say, all right, I think this coach, this manager fits at this level? Is it player specific? Is it just general age specific? Like, for example, I know last year you had a general idea that the Blue Claws here would have some pretty high end young arms and you want to slot Fred in there for that. And then as they move up, Matt's ready for them. But you did that for a specific reason. So, you know, what kinds of things do you look for to slot one coach or manager at one specific level?
I think a lot of different things go into it. Obviously, a lot of feedback from the front office, from my coordinators, you know, Dana Parks, our assistant farm director, Edwin Soto. And I think we look and see, like, just like you try and put players in the best, you know, environments to succeed, I think you try and do that with staff as well. So I think, like, you see the players who could be slotted at those levels, and maybe you have a pitching coach who's really good at teaching spin and, like, an overall, like, you know, developing their mindset. Like, maybe you have a pitching coach that really fits that, so you put him in that scenario. Same thing with hitting as well. You have a guy that's really good with, with younger kids who are working on certain different things in their training environment. You put a hitting coach there with them. And I think managers, I think you have identified kind of who you think could be potential managers throughout your organization. And I think you just, same thing again, like, where can we put them at a level to where they're not overwhelmed, but also can grow as a staff member as well.
Yeah, you brought Anthony Contreras with you from San Diego to AAA. So obviously you had seen a lot of stuff with him because he was, I think, the low A manager in San Diego. You think now, okay, he can work with these guys that are on the cusp of the big leagues.
Yeah. So Anthony, I got to spend a little bit of time around. He's also from, he was from Arizona where I was living too. So got exposed to him there in the off season, just a really easy demeanor about him. Great baseball mind, a real passion for helping kids and creating an environment that helps our players succeed. And at the end of the day, that's the goal. He did a great job there with Cesar Ramos, Joe Thurston, Greg Brzezinski, really created an environment to where our players want to be there. They want to play and they want to get up to the big leagues.
Preston, thank you so much for a few minutes. Have a great Thanksgiving and enjoy the winter meetings and congrats on a great first year with the Phillies.
Yeah, thank you. Anytime. Let me know. I'm always happy to talk about some great players in our organization.
All right. We'll have you back on before maybe we'll have you back on before spring training there. Do a little primer.
Sounds great.
Lightstar Energy Group is a leading energy brokerage firm headquartered in New Jersey. Our goal is to provide clients with premium energy management services to lower electricity and natural gas costs and to provide a long-term energy management strategy. We pride ourselves on bringing each and every individual business the same benefits of deregulation enjoyed by universities, municipalities, and all high-volume energy users. Tailored products and contracts, lower costs, personal attention, and outstanding service. Call us at 732-722-5880. To learn more about Lightstar Energy Group today, 732-722-5880. About Lightstar Energy Group today. So thanks to Preston Mattingly for joining us here on Hook, Line, and Splitter. We taped that on Monday of Thanksgiving week, and he was great. He was down in the DR, so we appreciate that he took a few minutes. And you can tell how excited he is about some of these young players in the system. I thought it was really cool that we talked about Carlos De La Cruz, who was a guy who, was here with the Blue Claws, a year plus out of high school in 2019. You could see the ability, but 6'8", very raw, and he's really turned himself into a prospect. And he was a guy that was mentioned a little bit about potentially being a guy added to the 40-man roster at the deadline last week. That didn't happen, but still very much in the mix heading into 2023. He had a great year. And I also thought it was cool. He mentioned Ben Brown. When I said, give me a guy that pitched here. And, Ben, such a great guy. We're going to be rooting for him with the Cubs. He's not even with the Phillies anymore. And he thought enough of Ben as a pitcher, as a human, as a man to mention him too. So I thought that was great. So, he said he'd come back on. So maybe next we'll have him on in the spring before spring training and talk about some of the guys that might well be Blue Claws the following year in 2023. And they're going through a lot of the coaching staff stuff right now, and we'll see what happens with that over the next few weeks and months. Friday, Saturday, Sunday is Cyber Weekend, Blue Friday, Black Friday, whatever you want to call it. A lot of great stuff going on in the Claws Cove and on BlueClaws.com. So I'll give you a quick rundown of things here for you. So on Friday, in person in the Claws Cove, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. is buy one, get one free Thursday Club Summer Saturday Club memberships. Each package includes 10 undated tickets that can be used for either Thursday or Saturday games in any denomination. Merchandise specials, buy one, get one 60% off. So you buy one item, and then you get a second item of equal or lesser value for 60% off. That's merchandise and ticket specials in person in the Claws Cove on Friday from 9 a.m. until 6 p.m. Saturday and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. in the Claws Cove, we'll have a prize wheel spin and save, and you can spin a prize wheel, get discounts or special offers on select items. 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday and Sunday, and then Friday through Monday, online in the Claws Cove at blueclaws.com/shop. Use different promo codes, and they're all listed on blueclaws.com, but JSBCBF20, you'll get 20% off orders of at least $75. JSBCBF25 for 25% offers off on orders of at least $125, and JSBCBF30 for 30% off on orders of at least $200. Shop online, blueclaws.com/shop. And then also online, ticket offers are, if you buy a mini plan online, a partial plan, 5 or 10-game plans, you'll get tickets, an additional game free. So those packages come with tickets to 5 of our best games or 10 of our best games, plus boardwalk game tickets at each game, hot dog, soda, novelty ice cream at each game as well. And if you buy over Cyber Weekend, online only, you'll get an additional game free. You will not get the – that's a ticket only, not the boardwalk tickets, not the food or dessert. But you'll get tickets to an additional game free if you buy your package online over Cyber Weekend. The other thing that's live now, of course, Marvel merchandise, the Defenders of the Diamond Collection. That went live on Friday the 18th, again, at blueclaws.com/shop. Hats, shirts, hoodies, socks, the whole thing. So you can go there and shop the Marvel collection today. So that will do it for us here, Hook, Line, and Splitter, episode 51. Thank you so much for joining us, and thanks to our special guest, Preston Mattingly, the Director of Player Development for the Philadelphia Phillies. For more information on all those Blue Friday Cyber Weekend sales, you can go to blueclaws.com. They're all posted right there for you. We'll get another episode or two in December, wrapping up 2022, and pretty soon we'll have baseball in Shortown 2023. Thanks for joining us. Have a happy Thanksgiving, everybody, to you and your family. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the football. Enjoy the soccer. And we'll have baseball here soon enough. Have a great day, everybody, and happy Thanksgiving. This is Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast.